Hello and welcome to another episode of the Studio One Planner podcast. I'm your host, Travis Hornsby. My baby boy is doing a little bit better in the NICU. That's why I'm here today, being able to hang out with you guys. I'm excited to report that he's learning how to eat. He is growing. He's doing better. So hopefully I'll be a little bit more regular presence on the podcast now in the coming weeks. And that's important because there's a whole bunch of stuff happening. I wanted to spend today's podcast doing a couple things. I wanted to take a listener question and really delve into what the Democrats and the Republicans are proposing for the future of student loans, which I do think could have a big impact on student loans in 2023 and 2024. And I also wanted to end today's show talking about a bill that I do think is going to pass in this Congress that's going to help out a small but important category of student loan borrower out there. And we might, if we have time, I might riff a little bit about cancellation, IDR plans, you know, fun stuff like that. So the first thing that I wanted to talk about is this listener question about refunds with this 10K and 20K cancellations. Let's listen to that from Kristen.
Thank you for taking questions. I recently contacted Nelnet to get a refund from a couple payments that I made during the COVID era, which was between now and March 13th, 2020. She cautioned me and said this could change the status of my loans to basically September 2022. And she said that the 10K forgiveness is only going to be applied to loans that were have a status before July 2022. So she cautioned me on taking a refund. What are your thoughts on this?
What do I think about that? I think that a lot of times people at loan servicers just like make stuff up. Maybe they're bored. Maybe they don't understand what they're being asked. Maybe they're really stressed and frustrated that the loan servicers are giving them no help and no guidance on what to say because the Department of Education is giving the loan servicers absolutely zero guidance and help as to what they should say. That doesn't mean that reps should just make stuff up, but it certainly sounds like that's what happened in this case. This person has no idea what they're talking about. The problem is this: when you have people that are making $15 to $20 an hour that are being asked to really give financial guidance and real detailed knowledge of extremely complex programs, you're going to get some people that know what they're talking about. You're also going to get some people that have absolutely no freaking clue what they're talking about. And that's just because that they have to hire who is willing to take that job for the hourly wage the company is willing to pay. This, I think, leads to a lot of the problems with the advice that student loan servicers give. It's why whenever I hear someone say you should never pay for help managing your student loans, it's like, oh, ha ha, like that's spoken like somebody that's never read the rules that the government wrote for these programs because they are super complicated. You know, when you ask somebody who is a very moderate working class wage earning person to explain complex repayment programs when there's a dozen different repayment plans, even when you ask them to explain all these complex breaking news type of laws the Department of Education is announcing, really trying to rush things through before there's potentially a change in control of Congress, these are important things to help borrowers, but it just creates chaos. And this is the kind of chaos it creates, is people hand out wrong information because the Department of Education is not doing a good job communicating. So I will say this, the cancellation announcement was a lot better planned than previous announcements that I've seen. The Department of Education is trying to address questions about the cancellation in real time as much as they can. So they did announce that they're going to try to provide 10 and 20K, you know, people that could benefit from refunds for the 10, 20K cancellation. They're going to try to provide those automatically. So I would still, if you've made a payment since March 13th of 2020, I still would probably suggest calling and asking for a refund of any of the payments that you've made, you know, if for no other reason than you could just plop that in a savings account and earn 2% for the next 3 or 4 months during the duration of the interest pause while they figure out what they're going to do on cancellation. But this is just a wonderful example of how bad information just gets tossed about and real problems happen when it comes to the student loan program. So remember, we're actually still open for business in terms of asking and answering questions on whatever you're interested in hearing about. We'd love to hear questions, what's on your mind. You can go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail to submit a question just like the listener Kristen did on today's show. So studentloanplanner.com/voicemail if you want to ask a question about any number of things with IDR plan that just got announced, the cancellation stuff, the end of the repayment pause coming up at the end of the year, potential challenges to cancellation and everything. So I thought that was a kind of a fun question. And I would just say, trust your servicer at your peril. I always like to trust what's on the NSLDS files because we have tools that we use to read that for our consulting clients, and we can really tell what's kind of true and what's not based off of just what's literally on that sheet. So I always like to go off based off of that versus what somebody's just randomly telling me. So let's dive into the Democrat and Republican plans to overhaul student loans. These are important things to know about, even though neither one of these two bills that were proposed by Democratic and Republican leadership in the House has any chance of actually happening. That doesn't mean that it's not going to happen at some point. It means it's not going to happen right now. And this is really kind of a preview of what each party's vision is for student loans moving forward past the midterms and just for the future. So obviously, there's this big student loan crisis. Loans are kind of out of control. Higher education costs are out of control. There's zero regulation, especially on not-for-profit schools, as to what they can charge. And you know, some of the things that are being done right now are addressing the symptoms and problems of student loans, providing relief to the student loan problem, but probably going to make the problem worse in the future, right? If you don't put in place any regulations on schools at all to make sure that they don't take advantage of students in the future, then schools are just going to act in their best interest and do that as long as they don't feel real consequences, right? The administration proposed putting sort of a shame list out with schools that have bad outcomes relative to debts. That doesn't mean anything. You can have a shame list all you want unless there's actual sanctions. Nobody's really going to care about that. Now, let's talk about these two different proposals. The REAL Act was proposed by House Republican leadership on the Higher Education Committee especially, and the Loan Act was proposed by the Democratic House Education Committee leadership. And those things, maybe this is kind of irrelevant, but the REAL Act stands for Responsible Education Assistance Through Loan Reforms Act. The Loan Act stands for Lowering Obstacles to Achievement Now. So if you forget which one is referencing which party, the REAL Act Republicans both start with R. So that's the Republican one. The Loan Act is the Democrats. Let's talk about the Loan Act first. The Loan Act does a lot of things in it. Now, remember, I said neither one of these bills is going to pass. So this is really just sort of like a campaign document that I would expect would, depending on which party controls Congress in 2023, these two bills are going to be, I would say, important in terms of the next reauthorization of the Higher Education Act. So we are way overdue for a reauthorization of the Higher Education Act. It's supposed to happen, I think, every 10 years or something like that. It's been a long time since we've had one. I might even be misstating that 10-year estimate. So it's been a long time since we've had a higher education reauthorization, and that's because of a polarized Washington, D.C. that can't agree on anything. So everybody's just been comfortable kicking the can down the road, you know, just sort of keeping things as is and not making any big changes. And that's why we have all this mess, because the executive branch has been acting in the absence of Congress. So what the Loan Act would do for the Democrats' plan is it would drastically lower interest rates on student loans. This has been proposed before. You know, certainly Senator Warren and people in the progressive wing of the Democratic Party have proposed this. So that's not too surprising, but this is coming from House Democratic Education Committee Chairman Representative Scott, I believe, Bobby Scott. So I think that that's a example that this is a serious proposal, right? Versus it coming from, you know, one of the most progressive senators in the party. This is coming from, you know, leadership that's, you know, a committee chair. Now, I will say this. The interesting part about this bill is that the cap on the interest for student loans, federal student loans, would just be the 10-year treasury bill, or I should say the 10-year treasury note. That currently is about 3.5%. So effectively, student loans for graduate students would go from being, you know, 7 or 8% to 3.5%. And that cap on federal student loans would not exceed 5%. So the Perkins loan program, that used to be a program where you had 5% interest rates. There's other kinds of programs through the Department of Health that have 5% interest rates. This program is really trying to let students borrow at the same rate that the government does. So you might say, well, that means that the government's just not going to be profiting off student loans, but they won't be losing money either. Well, that's not accurate, because any type of consumer or credit-based product has to bake in a cost of default into the interest rate, right? So if you just charge 3.5% and the government borrows at 3.5%, you're going to have some level of losses every year. And so that's why you see, you know, something like a credit card charge 15% is because they're expecting to lose 5%, 10% of the amount that they lend they were expecting to have to write that off effectively. And so that's why interest rates for credit cards are so high. Now, for student loans, you know, you can't discharge those in bankruptcy. So that's an example as to why you would expect the student loan rates to be lower than credit card rates. For houses, a lot of people say, well, why is my mortgage rate cheaper than my student loan? It doesn't make any sense. The reason is because a bank can seize a property, it's secured by a physical asset. And so that credit spread that you have to get above the 10-year treasury is less. Now, again, the government is not in the business to make a profit on the student loan system, right? It's got, you know, incentives of basically making voters happy. You wouldn't necessarily expect that market to be run like a market, but that's the proposal. Now, another interesting part of this is if you paired this proposal with the new IDR plan that Biden proposed, most people would probably not have to pay a lot in interest, and you'd really stretch this out just forever if you could. The repayment plans, I'm not so sure if they would eliminate all the existing repayment plans. So it would be kind of like the loan system of the 2000s, where interest was super low, below market rates, and you could stretch it out with like a 25 or 30 year repayment plan. And that's like the rational thing to do, because you can stretch it out with, you know, 3.5% interest, and you'd pay zero interest, you know, if your income was kind of low in the earlier part of your career. So you could keep your payments pretty low there. And there would be sort of a perverse incentive to not pay back your student loans rapidly. Now, you might say that's a good thing. That probably could be a good thing, right? But that's just some of the interesting things to think through when you're thinking about what would be the reaction to this. What advice would we give people if this bill passed? Another thing it does is double Pell Grants. It helps DACA recipients get access to financial aid. A lot of people don't know that a lot of DACA recipients have a really hard time going to higher education, especially grad school, because of limitations and access to student loans. The PSLF waiver changes would be codified, so you would be able to handle you'd have the same rules of PSLF kind of moving forward that have been temporarily in place. And it would also shorten PSLF from 10 years to, I think, 8 years, so 120 months to 96 months of payments, if I did that math right. Notice that this is not 5 years. There was a bill proposed recently that would shorten PSLF from 10 years to 5 years. I think that's telling that this bill shortens it to only 8. In other words, it's not as generous as previous things have been talking about. That could be because, you know, who knows exactly. I'm not sure why they chose 8 years, but it does show that they're, to me, that signals, hey, if we were going to do a bipartisan compromise, basically our red line is anything that touches PSLF. And so instead of just saying keep PSLF as is, we're going to go more generous, but we're not going to go way more generous just because of, you know, probably because if you do a bill through Congress, you actually have to pay for it. And so a 5-year bill would be a lot more expensive than an 8-year bill. So that's probably why they did it that way, just a guess. Now, the REAL Act for Republicans also does some really interesting things. A lot of this is a repeat of the PROSPER Act. So if you don't know what the PROSPER Act was, that was in 2017. And that was a very Republican bill to get rid of a lot of ways that the current student loan system is handled. And I would say this bill is similar to that, although it does focus more on borrowers, and it does actually do some things for borrowers that the Democrats' bill did not do, which is interesting. It would also hurt certain future borrowers significantly, right, financially. So a couple of thoughts. So first off, the Republican bill, and I believe the Democratic bill as well, would not negatively impact current borrowers. That's one thing that politically both parties seem to agree with, is we do not want to hurt current borrowers, we only want to affect future borrowers that take out loans in the future. And that kind of makes sense because you can sort of reduce the political damage you take if you say that. So the REAL Act that the Republicans in the House Education Committee and leadership have proposed, I believe it would actually forgive your loans if you've already made 10 years of principal plus interest payments. So if you're one of these people that borrowed $25,000 20 years ago and, you know, has been making payments for a long time, and you've paid $50,000 and you somehow owe $90,000, right? The reason that happens, by the way, is when people go through long periods of non-payment, their interest compounds. And so, you know, you might have a period of your life where you're in default or you're in forbearance and you're not making payments and your interest is just compounding on you. And that's how somebody could pay more than what they owe significantly and still owe even more. And so they would actually forgive those people's balances, those borrowers' balances. So that's actually more generous than the Democratic bill. Now, you might say, well, the IDR waiver would already do that. And that's true. If hopefully somebody would get around to issuing the FAQ for the IDR waiver, that'd be great. If anybody's listening that, you know, works in the Department of Education, please release the IDR waiver FAQ. If you've already released it by the time this pod comes out, I want to thank you. The Republican bill would also stop interest capitalization, which, you know, the Democrats plan reforms, regulatory reforms already do that. So it does seem like, you know, with Republicans supporting no more interest capitalization events, seems like that's here to stay no matter what. This new Republican bill would also allow borrowers to pay down their principal if they've been only being able to tackle interest for 10 years or more. It would allow people to use Pell Grants for some workforce training type programs. And the thing that would really hurt our audience if this bill passed is the Republican bill would eliminate PSLF for future borrowers. So not current, right? Future borrowers. It would replace all the IDR plans with something similar to old IBR, except here's the concern that I have with it. Their IDR proposal would be that it's no longer time-based. So it's no longer 20 years or 25 years. It would be until you've paid back 10 years of principal and interest. So, you know, if you've borrowed $100,000 and let's say that the interest added on over a 10-year period of time would be, I'm making up a number here, $125,000 total, then you would have to pay on this income-based repayment program until $125,000 is eventually repaid. That might happen over 5 years, 10 years, 20, 30, 40, forever. That's a concern. That's the similar structure they used in the PROSPER Act. That's interesting to me. I think that would cause a lot of issues, I think, psychological issues for borrowers, just to feel like that they're never going to get out from their loans. If you're never going to receive payments back that are anywhere close to the principal balance because somebody went to a bad program, I don't understand what the point of keeping that debt around forever is, and why not just reform the bankruptcy code to let that person declare bankruptcy and then maybe create some sort of civil penalties for the schools that put those people in that situation in the first place. And, you know, if you want to say, well, hey, certain types of institutions serve lower income students that are more at risk, it's kind of like similar to how, you know, there's safety net hospitals that, you know, are going to have a lot more losses than the more prestigious, more well-endowed hospitals. And so those hospital systems should have different treatments because of that fact. You know, that maybe is an argument you can make, but, you know, certainly it seems like this, I call it, you know, an eternity IDR plan. I don't think, first of all, this is a House Republican proposal, right? And so I don't think the Senate Republicans would agree to that, to be honest. But I guess what you could say is if you're looking for the trend in student loans, the 2017 bill was, I would say, very conservative. And this bill is still pretty conservative. It also, by the way, it also would cap borrowing for grad students. So grad students would not be able to take out, I believe, any more than like the Stafford limit of $138,000 or something like that. It also, the REAL Act would block Department of Ed from doing certain things like cancellation, pausing student loans, you know, the stuff the Biden administration has been doing. So I guess the way I would look at this is a bill like in 2017 that was very conservative. And in 2022, this bill is like, I would say, conservative light. And you might say, huh, conservative light. It's abolishing PSLF and getting rid of all the generous IDR programs and blocking cancellation. How's that conservative light? Well, it does things like stopping interest capitalization. It does stuff that forgives loans automatically if people have made a certain amount of payments. It is interesting that they are trying to pivot a little bit more towards the center. I mean, maybe it's a small pivot, but it is a pivot. And I think what this is intended to be is the opening salvo in a bipartisan negotiation over Higher Education Act reauthorization. If you were to see the House Republicans take the House and Democrats keep the Senate, I think nothing like this bill would actually become law. If the Republicans took the Senate and the House, still this type of bill would not become law. Why? Because President Biden is President Biden, right? And he would veto it. Regardless of whether or not the Republicans make a lot of gains in the midterms or not, you know, if they did make any gains at all, they, you know, there was a lot of things in here that would be non-starters. PSLF would have to stay in its current form. Democrats would never agree to let PSLF go away, right? So PSLF would have to stay. They would probably get the PSLF waiver changes codified. That would probably be something they would be willing to do. I'm saying House Republicans. My guess is they would agree to not doubling the Pell Grant, but increasing it somewhat in exchange for letting, you know, workforce training programs have Pell Grants. With immigration being a hot button issue, I'm not so sure that they would agree for DACA recipients to get federal financial aid. Maybe they would be willing to agree to that, maybe. And both sides want income-based program. But I think the Biden administration probably feels like they have the upper hand here because they are coming out with a extremely generous income-based program that is really intended to be the best plan. That's what they're trying to do, I think. We'll have to see how they treat married borrowers shortly. Hopefully that'll come out, those rules, proposed rules. But there is a chance that this proposal gets walked back a little bit in the public comment period. And the reason is the Brookings Institution came out with like a piece recently that really kind of raised the alarm bells about this new IDR plan, basically calling this IDR plan taking the higher education finance system from loans to untargeted grants. And that might be a good outcome if you're someone who's a progressive. That would be a positive outcome. The article, though, does raise, I think, the caution signs, right, of people that might be looking at, you know, what this final rule might look like. But I guess what I'm saying here is, okay, Republicans propose, you know, an IBR plan, 15% of your income until you paid back 10 years of principal and interest. You know, Democrats are proposing something extremely generous, a brand new IDR plan that is way more generous. Well, even if Republicans retake the House, they can't stop the Biden administration from doing this super generous IDR plan. And what's happened with pay and repay? Once you've come out with this plan, you know, it gets into people's promissory notes and people have the expectation they get to keep it. So I'm pretty sure that's what the Biden administration is trying to do here. And, you know, if we think about House Republicans, you know, how would they react to that? You know, maybe the compromise is just sort of, you know, take that new IBR plan, which is basically 10 years, 10% of your income, 20 years till loans are forgiven. It's like the pay plan, really, but it's only for borrowers 2014 and newer. Maybe you come up with some sort of system that gives some interest subsidies, some of the stuff that the Biden IDR plan is doing, but you codify it, which means it's more permanent. Maybe that might happen is you'd have a bunch of haggling over the IDR program. You take the Biden proposal and you walk that back a little bit, make it a little bit less generous in exchange for getting rid of all the other programs. Maybe that's possible, but that's big maybe. That's a real big maybe. Why? Because I think both sides think that they can get something better by not compromising. I think Republicans, you know, this is just me trying to be a hot take political analyst or something. My guess with student loans, right, is Republicans see a more upside to showing like they're willing to compromise because they don't have power right now and they don't have the White House right now. So they don't have those avenues to those levers to pull. Democrats feel like there's more upside to really leaning into the big changes they want to see in the student loan program. And if Democrats keep the House, keep the Senate, maybe expand their margin in the Senate, the question would be if we have a Senate that is, you know, maybe 53 senators instead of 50, if the filibuster is no longer there, would the Senate Democrats be willing to do something with the student loan program as progressive as what these House Democrats have proposed? That's a real question. I would guess that they might be willing to move on the interest rate. They might be willing to push the interest rate down. If the Senate Democrats pick up several seats in the Senate, they might be willing to do something like that. They might be willing to increase the Pell Grant maybe 50%, maybe not double it, maybe up a little bit. Probably, I think they'd probably keep PSLF in place and just try to codify the PSLF waiver changes. And then the IDR plan, they probably would try to codify that instead of just make it an executive action, which would be a lot easier for a potential future Republican president to just overturn. So there is a lot going on with student loans right now. These are, you know, again, political statements by each party. They're not policy. So we don't really need to lean in too much to thinking, hey, what should you be doing? Well, there's nothing you should be doing right now. I think what it does say is what we've been saying for a long time, which is people that are obvious, you need to pay back your loans people, which is, you know, people that are making more than what they have in debt, people in the private sector, right? We've been saying this for a while. Those are obvious pay back your loans cases. And this is true still for the new Biden IDR plan. If you're a grad degree professional, you know, you're a dentist, $200K in debt, $250K of income, you're not going to get forgiveness. Now, there's some exceptions, maybe if you've had loans for 25 years or something, but in general, you're not going to get forgiveness. So you might as well refinance if you can get a lower interest rate when they turn interest back on again. One thing that I'm monitoring, just to be transparent, is what is happening with interest rates right now? This is weird. The 1-year treasury rate hit like 4% recently, and the 30 years at 3.5. So the yield curve is very inverted. And also people are starting to get more nervous about the stock market. And if you have a situation where you have high interest rates and more credit risk, you know, you could really see the refinancing market just not exist anymore, at least temporarily. Because if you think about federal loans, 7%, well, if your 30-year interest rate's 3.5%, and you have, you know, 3% credit spread instead of 1 or 2, which historically it's been, that would put a private interest rate at like 6.5. Well, nobody would leave the federal program for from 7 to 6.5. Right now, I think that it's more like 5% that people can get with the private refinance for a 20-year. But all it would take is for interest rates to continue to go up a little bit more, and suddenly, you know, and people to get a little bit more scared out, you know, credit and default risk, and then suddenly people would not be able to refinance to a lower rate. So I do hope that the market kind of holds together long enough for when interest does begin again, presumably in January. You know, hopefully people that have been waiting to refinance for like 2-3 years to get, you know, obviously just get a lower statutory rate in their loan will be able to do so before that opportunity doesn't exist anymore. Now you might say, well, boo-hoo, it's like 1 or 2% savings for me. That might be a good point. Maybe you're only saving $2,000 or $4,000 a year, right? If you're saving 1 or 2% on your loan. It's still real money. It's still after tax dollars because student loan interest is not tax deductible. So I think that you just have to be thinking, you know, if I'm a person with 30K of federal loans with 50K income right now, obviously don't refinance. That'd be a disaster because of this cancellation thing. We don't know how it's going to end up. If you're refinancing, you know, graduate school level loans right now, I would certainly leave behind 10 or 20K just in case this cancellation thing works out as expected. But I am still kind of monitoring that closely. And the reason is, you know, if the Republicans don't vigorously legally fight this, that means President Biden could have canceled all student loan debt. And the only reason he didn't cancel all student loan debt is because he just did not, you know, decide to. And that's a precedent that I would assume Republicans would not want to allow to stand. And there's a lot of Republicans out there that are trying to make a name for themselves on the national stage, you know, if, you know, you don't see a Trump 2024 type of campaign, right? So there's people like Ted Cruz out there, and I think the attorney general in Arizona, Brnovich, I think his name is, something like that, that have been pretty vocal about trying to come up with a way to block the student loan cancellation. And that's a real X factor too, frankly, because if they have the student loan cancellation that they block or they get an injunction against it, I could really easily see the administration saying, oh, well, you tied our hands. Now, instead of payments starting in January, we're going to have them start when all of our new student loan changes are set to take effect in July 2023. That's why I would say if you've got federal student loans right now, probably wait until you've confirmed that interest has started again. I had a little different tune back in January 2020, even January 2022, frankly, where interest rates were so low, people could lock in like a 3% for 20-year fixed. If you're going to pay back your loans over a longer period than 1 year, you know, that's something that, in our estimation, for many people, was worth giving up the 0% interest subsidy to lock that rate in. It turns out that was probably good advice because now the 20-year rates are like 5, 5.5, and they could get worse. You're never going to be able to time this perfectly, right? So don't get too upset about this because it's just something that's not worth worrying about because ultimately there's a lot of other things in the world that are worth worrying about. Trust me, I've learned this personally with dealing with a baby in the NICU, you know what I mean? I mean, you know, think about what you've gone through in your life. Think about the things you've experienced, the hard times that are worth worrying about, and then student loan stuff. You know, at the end of the day, we're all going to be dead at some point, and so none of this is eventually going to matter, right? So just remember that. If you ever get stressed about your student loans, just think about the stuff that is worth getting stressed about, and then maybe, you know, focus your energy on just dealing with those things, and just knowing the student loans are always something that you can get rid of that anxiety just by knowing the rules, listening to like some strategies, just paying attention to free content out there, and paid help if you think you need it because your loan situation is significant enough. One positive thing to leave you with is a future bill is coming down the pipeline that's going to be voted on, I think, pretty soon. It might already have passed by the time this comes out, called the Joint Consolidation Loan Separation Act. It's actually being sponsored or put forward in the House by my congressperson, Representative David Price, who's retiring at the end of this term. So thank you for that, Congressperson Price. And if that passes, I think it was passed unanimous consent in the Senate. So this is really only going to affect a few hundred people, I believe, but this is a big deal. This, we get emails about this. We probably have gotten emails from, I would say, half of the people with spousal consolidation loans, would be my guess, because these folks are desperate. And you know, it's a loan that you consolidated with a spouse years ago. And in many cases, these borrowers are, you know, they left their marriage due to abuse or an ex-spouse doesn't want to communicate with them anymore and does not want to share their income information. So they're having a hard time jointly signing up for income-based repayment. So it's a real mess. And this bill would allow people to get relief that have those kind of loans. So I do think that's actually going to be passed. I think President Biden at some point will sign it. I don't necessarily know if that's going to make those folks eligible for all the different waiver programs that are currently out there. But at least if this loan will be in somebody's individual name, there'll be a lot of relief that we can help people with, just like, you know, like getting onto an income-based program that's better than IBR, not having to worry about, you know, your ex-spouse's income information anymore. So that's exciting news. And I do think that what that shows is eventually really bad problems with the student loan system do get fixed. The problem is Congress takes their sweet time. And right now, the student loan system is bad, but it's not as bad as some other things. And so Congress is just choosing to kick the can down the road. Let's hide the interest costs through sort of subsidies for the IBR programs. Let's stop interest capitalization events. You know, these are good things for borrowers, but what they really do is just, again, it's Band-Aid stuff for the real problem, which is the out-of-control cost of higher education and how inaccessible that's become. And that's really a real problem that our country's going to have to work really hard to think about as to what the solution is to that. I'm not really sure I have the answers. I would just like to raise the questions with you and let you decide. Couple updates. So the consulting business is pretty swamped right now, but we can still help. So if you go to studentloanplanner.com/book, what I would say is anybody who's doing PSLF waiver stuff, we did just get confirmation that as long as you submit your consolidation application and your PSLF application before October 31st, 2022, you will be eligible for the PSLF waiver stuff according to Department of Ed's public guidance. How would you do that if you're not at Mohila already? There's actually a place on the PSLF form that you can basically send that to certified mail. And there's you can also fax it, but I would recommend probably doing certified mail. And you can do that as long as you get that date on there before October 31st, 2022. You can still be eligible for all the good stuff about the PSLF waiver. So what that means for us is we can help you with PSLF waiver kind of stuff all the way until the bitter end, all the way until the deadline. And the IDR waiver stuff, this is just a guess, but I'm guessing that they're going to come out with the FAQ and the IDR waiver at some point in the next few weeks, and that they're going to focus on implementing the IDR waiver next. So my guess is they'll do IDR waiver from, you know, November 1st until, let's say, maybe July 2023. That's just a real random guess. And then they'll focus on making sure all the cancellation stuff is handled between July and December 2023. Keep in mind, you also have loan repayments beginning again in January of 2023. You have interest starting again after almost 3 years of not having to make payments. It's going to be a big lift. It's going to be real chaotic. Department of Education has their hands full, and they only create more and more work for themselves because they're trying to help as many borrowers as possible, which is a good thing. But when you do that and you don't provide the resources to implement it, it's a big problem. And that's what I think we're seeing. Going back to the beginning of today's episode, that's why that listener got such a bad answer, because Department of Ed is spending hundreds of billions in loan relief, but they're spending almost nothing implementing it because they can't do that without consent of Senate Republicans, I think. It's just my guess. And so you're providing no money to actually implement this stuff, or not enough. That means that folks that are listening to podcasts like this are going to get more help because you're going to know more of what to do with the limited resources Department of Ed has to communicate what to do. And the folks who don't pay attention are going to get less. You can help with that problem by spreading the word, sharing free resources like this podcast, the Loan Planner podcast, newsletter, and website, and others, you know, stuff on Reddit, you know, student aid website, share everything. It doesn't hurt. It only helps. So thank you for everyone. Thank you for all the well wishes for our baby boy. Again, he's doing well. So hopefully I'll be joining you more regularly very soon. Thank you and have a wonderful rest of your week.